Okay, back on after a quick break. Hopefully the temperature is a little cooler in here. It's starting to get very warm before. So we had been talking about your job at Hayden Chemicals, mm-hmm. and you said that you were hands in a laboratory. And I was curious, you and your friend from Vassar were both working at Hayden Chemicals. Do you recall if there were many other women that were working there?
I don't think there were. It's hard to remember. Oh, there, of course, there were the usual secretaries, but I don't think there were others. I'm trying to bring back pictures of, you know, recall pictures of what it was like. But one of the things I can remember is it must have been the group that we were in. Anyway, I remember outside the actual laboratory, there were metal cabinets that supplies were kept in, mm-hmm. and one of the supplies was a butyl acetate, I think, and it had apparently slightly corroded the container just at the liquid level, and if you tipped it forward, then you got this ghastly odor. So my comment about that. I remember one thing about I was doing something. Must have been some sort of a distillation system, or maybe I was refluxing something. Anyway, I ended up. This was after the usual working hours. This is why I remember it, because the thing began spewing out, and trying to stop it, which I eventually did. I got a fair amount on my hand, so then I had to go out to the guardhouse, to get help. Mm-hmm. And they took me somewhere where they packed my hand in some compound, wrapped it up. So I had.
Did they take you to the hospital or somewhere?
No.
Somewhere on the company.
It was just there.
Okay.
So I don't remember if they ever felt there was anything important enough. I'm sure they wrote up reports on it, because I know here where I am at Waverly, if you get a nick somewhere or other, and it was bleeding, mm-hmm. and so of course I put a Kleenex on it and went out to the front desk to and said I wanted a Band-Aid. Oh, one doesn't get Band-Aids. They applied. So then the nurse had to come and she did this, that, and the other thing, and then they have to write it up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it sounds familiar.
Well, it's funny. My husband works for DuPont as a chemist, and you know they have to write up every very minor accident in the hopes of preventing larger accidents. And they had an incident where a cabinet door came unhinged. It didn't upset any chemicals, nothing happened, but this door fell off the cabinet when someone opened it. And they had to have an investigation about what happened to the cabinet and why did the hinges come loose and all of these things. I mean, you know, it's great that it was so safe, but they wasted hours and hours. When
the door didn't fall down on somebody's foot and hurt it.
No one was hurt. No one was hurt. It just, something happened with
the
door.
I think organizations tend to make sure that their backside is protected.
Yes. Now, at Hayden Chemicals, I'm not quite sure of the time frame. So were you there while it was still World War II, or had the war already ended by the time you started working there?
I think it's a slightly yes and no, because I remember the time at which somebody came down some stairs, and there was I don't know what the area was there, but they announced Roosevelt's death, so
yeah.
I remember that and thinking, oh my, Harry Truman. So that's my recollection of that. So that gives you an indication of the time.
Right.
And at Hayden, one of the friends that I met there, and we did things together. She had an unfortunate accident, and she, I guess was, maybe it was partly her fault. She did something, and she, with a glass beaker, and I think it cut her hand badly. And so there was a great to-do about that, needless to say. I don't know whether they were. And I think the thing that was sad about it was she was an amateur violin player, and I think this was going to affect her.
Yeah.
So it must, maybe it was this hand. The violin, I guess it was with this hand. Anyway, I'm sure they made a big, I hope they made a big to-do about that, but I remember thinking that's very, very sad.
Yes.
And I know there was a man in the laboratory too. I guess he was. We're actually doing the same things we must have been doing, but I really don't remember. That seems to be not a very clear time.
Yeah. Do you recall, though, before we move on, any of your male colleagues, did anyone give you a hard time about being a woman? I mean, you were coming from Vassar, and even though there had been kind of this influx of men due to the GI Bill, you know, it's surrounded predominantly by women, and then you go to work at Hayden Chemical, and you're surrounded predominantly by men. So was it ever problematic?
I don't remember thinking it was at all.
Okay.
I remember things like they had a hydrogenation set up with what we call a rocker bomb. It's the thing that goes back and forth like that. It's just mixing the thing, and it blew up. Well, fortunately, it did it when nobody, when some off hours when nobody was around. But it punctured a big hole apparently in the building ahead, but didn't do any damage. But another time, something similar to that must have had a major effect on the surrounding neighborhood. Although I'm only dimly recalling that, but I recall a man who worked in one of the laboratories, Clark Bricker, I think was his name, and it was somebody that we got to know, both my Emmy, my roommate, and I. I say Emmy, I'll have to think of, I'm not sure that's her name. Because I have a good friend here at Waverly who's Emmy, and so I'm confusing them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I remember Clark particularly. He was in he had his own laboratory somewhere or other, but I had seen him subsequent to Hayden. I had seen him in some Chemical Society meeting, and I was interested to at that point we probably sat together and reminisced about Hayden.
Yeah.
And of course shortly after we as I say the at the end of the Second World War, the government no longer gave research incentives to companies to provide working things,
right?
Provide
during,
money
during the war.
Yes,
there was all this need for.
And so I think when that stopped, this is when a lot of us were let off.
Okay,
so that was the end of. So we say that was my first firing. and let's see where did I go from there.
Now, I know that at some point you ended up working at the Penn Medical School. Mm-hmm. Was that the next?
That may have been.
Okay. Do you recall how you ended up down
there?
No,
I don't think so. I think the next job I get was at McNeil Laboratories.
Oh, okay.
This is before Jane, before they were bought out by J&J.
Right.
And I don't know exactly what I was doing in the laboratory, but I remember some of the things that I thought we were seeing, the way they coat the pills and all these the things. But we must have been doing something because one of their products had a colorant in it, which made the product green.
Oh.
And I remember saying, well, all you have to do is say, Tylenol Green has gone to war. And I thought if they would just adopt that. But that's just, you know, this is when, at McNeil, this is when I actually knew, not well, but I did know Bob McNeil, who was the president. Now, I think what ended the employment there, I think, was when the chronology may not be accurate, but we'll try, was when my stepfather, who taught at Amherst College, was going to take a half-year sabbatical, and he and my mother were planning to go travel around Europe for the 6 months. And they asked me if I would like to come along. And I said, sure, if I could bring a friend. So I asked my friend, and she said, sure. So we quit our jobs. I bought a car, and with one of these supposedly repurchase agreements that at the end of the trip they would buy it back again.
Huh.
Well, anyway. But I know the four of us sailed from Hoboken on a ship that on one of the Holland American Line ships, and it was a ship that had been, I think, a troop carrier. And so it didn't have any particular fancy. It was mostly a one-class ship, except for the very top level, which was, I think, the first class. It was all one thing except the first class. So that was, and of course, this is February, we soon ran into very bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Ruth and I said we ate our way across the Atlantic because neither of us seemed to be bothered by the pitch and roll and this and that. But my mother was definitely, and I think she spent a lot of the time in bed. The other in the book, the other thing I remember about the trip over was not only was we had to brace ourselves. It was hard to really get comfortable in a bunk because you had to brace yourself because of the motion of the ship. It was really pretty. And then, of course, the food, the first thing they did was they put up the sides on the tables.
They
all have rims that go up about that high. Then the next thing was they wet down the tablecloth so that the glasses of things wouldn't slide around in it. And then the last final thing that they did was they removed all stemware. So that was our transatlantic trip.
Where did you go when you were in Europe, once you landed?
Well, I don't remember. Anyway, I had the car, so we landed in Cherbourg and picked up the car, and we found out that maybe we had more luggage than we thought the car could hold, or that we expected the car to hold. So we just simply essentially took a map of Europe and spent about 1 month in each country.
Oh, wow.
The first thing we did was we felt, since it was winter time, it was February, maybe we should head down to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it'd be warmer.
Yeah, we thought it should be warmer. So toured around Spain. And this is at a time when border crossings required passports, they didn't require too much. One of the things they required was that the owner of the car had to sign something. And that was, I owned the car, but of course my stepfather was paying for everything. So when they asked me things like, how much money do I have? I said, I don't have any money. So anyway, that was a fascinating time, and eventually, of course, one has to come home, and this is when I found out that Ruth had gone off with her brother at some point. Her brother joined us, maybe in Sicily, and then. Somewhere or other in Italy, maybe Sicily, Ruth and her brother went off to explore some of the places that we weren't going to. So I guess I don't know if she missed Greece or not. No, she didn't miss Greece. I remember her in Greece. But anyway, an amazing trip, really was.
I can imagine. I mean, even just the couple of places you mentioned just now, it sounds amazing. Spain,
yes.
Italy,
Greece.
Thing
that I noticed particularly, the contrast between Spain, this is still under Franco,
mm-hmm.
and so all the way out in the country, you would still find these soldiers parading, patrolling. But Spain itself was just immaculately clean. It was nothing. You couldn't drop a tiny piece of paper what somebody would get picked up. It was beautiful. Then we went to Sicily. Sicily was a mess. I think maybe the Spanish sent everything over to Sicily. I don't know, but the contrast was quite great.
Now, you said you were gone for about 6 months,
mm-hmm.
before you came back.
Yes.
Now, did you have a job when you came back, or you had quit your position at McNeil?
Yes. Yes. I thought maybe I would, but when I inquired, the position was no longer open.
Okay.
So that was when I finally decided that I probably needed some money. I had an apartment. See, I had sublet the apartment, and whoever was there, fortunately, I had a good friend still in Germantown, and she, I think, took care of the mess that they had, that the so-called renters had done. I don't remember if they ever paid me, but beside the point. Anyway, I finally decided that I probably needed some money, and so I applied at Storrs and Clothiers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I was working as a sales lady in their pillows and hassocks department. And apparently I impressed the supervisor enough so that at the end of my time they offered me a job. Permanent job. And I said, no, I'm going back to chemistry. But I liked the compliment. I think the thing that probably got them is that I treated all customers, no matter what they looked like, the same.
Yeah. You know?
And some of them probably had more money than books. But anyway, that ended that. So then I stayed in Germantown with my friend Ruth, who had an apartment then in Germantown. Stayed with her for about a month while I looked for a place to live.
Okay. Now, how long had you been in Philadelphia? Obviously, you'd been in Philadelphia when you worked at McNeil. But had you been there at this point, regardless of the Europe trip, for a couple of years, or?
No, I mean, the time in Philadelphia was started really when I worked for Penn. But before that, see, my mother had been at the Baldwin School for Girls.
Okay.
And she was, her position was really a house mother. This is at the time when the Baldwin School had boarding students at high school level.
Okay.
And so she was that, and so she had a house there on that the school owned, and she had the first floor of that, which was close enough to walk.
Okay.
I'm really close, I can't say. It was just right behind the big Presbyterian church.
Right.
And on Bryn Mawr Avenue.
How nice. What we kind of skipped over when you worked for Penn. What did you do when you were at Penn?
Well, we ran what was called the Liver Local, and this is the medical students, or maybe they were graduate interns. They had a year that they did research work. I don't know whether it's a standard procedure, but they were part of the program, and they operate on the white rats, and they took out most of their, well, at least 50% of the rat's liver. Mm-hmm. And when I call it the Liver Local, then we ran the liver in a petri dish or something down the hall, up the stairs, around the corner, and finally into our laboratory where it was digested and treated.
So you were running livers around?
Yes, that was, so we called that the Liver Local because we had to go. You know, it was the laboratory was on the second floor, or on the floor above where they were. So,
okay.
That was.
Now, again, you said when you worked for Hayden Chemicals that you were hands in a laboratory. Would you say the same of your time at Penn, that you were hands in a laboratory, just different kind of lab work?
I think that was mostly it, yes. We were, as I say, we were doing some of the and nitrogen determinations on the liver. The idea was this was a nutrition problem, but I don't remember how they evaluated it, whether they evaluated it by the health of the rat, or did they have to open them up again to find out how much the liver had regenerated, because it does. And so the interns had to take very good care of the rats.
Right. Did you have any contact with the rats while they were alive?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I'm not a squeamish person. I don't scream when a mouse comes around the corner. And I actually did one operation on a rat just to show that I could do it. So.
Now, in this position at Penn, do you recall if there were other women that were working there?
Well, the only other woman was up in the laboratory. There were women, and down in the main part, this is where I had met my friend Ruth Brown, and because she was a histologist, and she would make put the things into wax and then make the serial sections of them.
Right.
And apparently at that time, the two of us looked, were the same height and roughly the same coloring, and apparently we looked enough alike so that most people thought we were sisters.
And then this is the friend that went with you to Europe as well.
She's still my friend. She's up at Cathedral Village.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Wonderful.
I should say she's my oldest friend, but unfortunately now all we can get together is to by telephone.
Yeah. Well, by telephone is better than nothing.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, when you were doing the work at Penn, did you like that this had a little bit more maybe biological or medical aspect to it? Or did you just like that it was being in lab?
Well, I think it was just as being in a lab. The head of the laboratory was a very, very kind and very intelligent man, Dr. Vars, and he helped us over, you know, if there was a problem, he would help us try to solve it. And then I remember one of the men in the lab was working there, I think in part hoping that by working there he could get some credit toward getting into medical school. Mm. And I think we used to make his life a bit difficult sometimes. And I think his name was Melvin, and he gave the two of us, Joan and I, he gave us each a copy of War and Peace. And I think he also took us, or maybe we took him, to The Death of the Salesman.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if he ever got into medical school. I wish I knew.
So I'm curious about, after you worked at Strawbridge's, after your trip to Europe, they offered you this permanent position. You said, no, I'm going to go back to chemistry. Did you have a job at that point, or were you just looking for a job to get back in the lab?
I'll tell you, for a while there, I don't remember when, this is, I guess, before bed, I lived with my friend Ruth while I was looking for a place to live,
mm-hmm.
and it took about a month to find an apartment that I thought was suitable for me. And then the next thing was, well, I had to persuade the landlady that I was, and my answer to her questions were, I have an independent income. And then once I got the apartment, then my first request was to find a cleaning woman. And then I don't remember what the second request was. The third one was, I thought I should get a job. That was a succession, because I didn't. So you can see, I'm sure I must have had some financial help from my parents,
mm-hmm.
from my mother. I can't believe I existed on just Strawbridge's money.
Right.
When I was at Penn, two very famous men were head of the department that supervised, I guess, only the young interns. And one was I.S. Ravdin, and the other was Jonathan Rhodes. And my friend who worked there, she wasn't the one in the Liver Local Laboratory. But anyway, the story is that she went and asked, she asked Iris for a raise, and Iris said, well, you don't need any more money. You live at home.
Oh.
So this is our feeling about men and women.
Well, it's a very interesting response. Well, it's about 12:15, and we've been talking for quite a while today. I'm not sure, I think you guys are headed to lunch at some point, and I'm not sure if now would be a good time to do that, and we can pick up tomorrow with talking about, I think the next place that you worked is when you went to work for Roman Haas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's up to you if you want to keep going for a little while, or if you want to call it a day for today. Well, should we start talking about Roman Haas for just
okay.
a little bit?
And all right, talk a little bit about it. How did I even know about them? I guess maybe I was just canvassing various chemical companies, because by then I was sort of committed to Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so they hired me as hands, really, in a laboratory that was most of the emphasis on that particular laboratory was trying to get formulations in order to be able to apply an insecticide to banana trees.
Okay.
To control something called Sigatosa, which is a pest of them. And you had to get something that was, you couldn't put it in an aromatic solvent, because that might damage them. So it had to be something that you could somehow disperse in water and be able to spray. So I guess eventually they must have found the solution. But that was part of what we were working on.
Now, when you worked for Roman Haas, where were you located? Because, at the Chemical Heritage Foundation, there's a Roman Haas building just down the street.
That's for the people who wear dresses, the women who wear dresses and the men who wear suits.
Okay, for the bigwigs.
Some of them were just ordinary secretary types. But anyway, that was definitely not a laboratory.
Okay.
No, it was out in Bridesburg. And Bridesburg was famous for many things, one of which was that the Bridesburg plant made, made a compound which they used in other places, but it must have permeated everything. And so anybody who worked there, you could smell. They would get into their clothing and in their cars, and it was not present. But the other thing about working at Bridesburg Place was there was a blind chemist there, and so Frank Lavis, and one of the rules was that nothing could be left out in the corridors anywhere, because he walked all around with. And he knew where to go or how to get there, but they couldn't put anything in that would trip him up.
Right.
And he was somebody that he had a friend who's a chemist who was by this time I was out of the laboratory, and I was now part of the information group at Bridesburg. Let's go back slightly. When they built research laboratories and at Bristol, right by the Burlington-Bristol Bridge, they moved all of us out there from the laboratories.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess, I'm not exactly sure how it worked out, but apparently they must have decided that maybe I wasn't as useful there as I could be back in the information group in the attached to the library in Bridesburg. I think I'm patting myself on the back, but anyway. And at that point, there was a PhD woman chemist there, who I'm not sure what she did. I think she wrote up bulletins, information bulletins. I think that's what it was.
Do you recall her name by any chance?
Her last name was Tucker. Hmm. And I'll think of her first name. Helen Tucker, maybe. Every day, Frank Glavis, the blind chemist, would come up to the, by up. This is in the library, but it's upstairs on a a mezzanine.
Okay.
And he would go to Helen's office, and she would read technical things to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, when she retired, and this was at the time when Roman Haas and other companies had the policy of women retired at 60 and men retired at 65.
Hmm.
Just definitely that one. And so Frank used to come there one every day anyway, maybe at a set time, I'm not sure. But then she would read technical articles to him or converse about various chemical things. Then she retired, and in a way, I was able to inherit him. So he then, it wasn't much of a change of location because I was still up in the mezzanine. So I would then read things to him, and I was pretty good. I'm pretty good at French. I'm not so good at German.
Okay. But is that something that you had learned at Vassar, the French, or is it something that you had just picked up along the way?
To be a chemistry major, to be certified as a chemistry major, you have to have at least a year of German.
Hmm.
And that was it. The French was, I've had French since the third grade.
Oh, okay.
French is one of the things that I think once you've been exposed to, you don't really lose it. You may not be proficient, but you don't ever really lose it.
Hmm.
And because I know, it turned out to be reasonably useful for me in Europe, because in Spain, I found if I spoke French and didn't rattle off, and they spoke to me in Spanish, we would communicate. We would get all right. So, but anyway, then when Helen retired, much to her, I think she didn't want to. She didn't, feel any physical impairment. But anyway, that was her rule. So then Frank would come to me, and I would read technical articles to him and patents that interest him. So that was, and what I did when he wasn't there, of course, I had a job, and the job was of essentially writing, finding patents that were pertinent to various people in the company, and essentially writing up an information bulletin.
Now, in terms of finding these patents, of course, today you just go on the computer, do a quick search online, patents appear on the computer screen. But that wasn't the case when you were doing
it. Well, I mean, you may get them all online, but what do you get? I mean, what are you looking for? You have to look for something. You can't just...
Right, right. So how were you doing these searches? Were you just going through... going through pieces of paper?
I must have had them. Maybe there was some order that they came in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I actually had the patents. But certainly the journal articles that I would read to him were ones that, I just got circulated to me. So.
Was there any sort of computer system in the library and information? Okay.
This is still before, this is way before that.
Okay.
Because I don't think I started on computers until I got to mobile.
Okay. So everything was by hand.
Everything's by hand or typewriter.
Right.
In fact, you couldn't. the things that you could do now, they would look on and think, "Oh, how can you be so? You know, why can't you do it this way? Why can't you do it that way?"
Well, it's interesting, as we mentioned very quickly before we started talking in the interview. You know, we're in the Eugene Garfield room where we're conducting the interview, and we have a number of oral histories in the collection that talk about library and information sciences in the chemical industry, and people have talked at various times about trying to figure out ways to do keyword searches, whether it be for patents or journal articles or just kind of in-house research at some different locations, and using punch cards and using all sorts of different and evolving computer systems as they became available. And it's just fascinating because, of course, like I said, today you just type your keywords into the computer and something appears.
Yes. Whether it's useful or not, you have to know enough to find out. But anyway, Gene Garfield was really, he put out a publication which was, I don't know whether it was monthly or more often than that, of essentially summarizing various fields.
Mm-hmm.
He really started it. He really promoted the information products.
That he did.
Is he still alive?
I believe that he is.
Yes, I thought so. I mean, I hope so.
Did you know him? Did you meet him?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, we were lucky enough. We have two oral histories with him, which are quite nice.
Good.
Quite informative about all of the work
yes.
that he did and all
well,
the
he was. I mean, he was really the in this area, maybe more than just this area. He was really the originator
mm-hmm.
of all this. I mean, so he's admired by many, many people.
Yes.
For all the work that he, his brilliant mind devised.
Very, very true. Well, again, I'm going to ask the same question as before. Is it time to call it a day? And
I think maybe it is.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, then this sounds like a good place to pick up tomorrow.
All right.
And we will do that.